Welcome to Funds That Won, where we dive into some of the world's most renowned investment funds. We'll interview investment managers across the alternative landscape and learn how they built their million and even billion dollar asset management empires. We'll explore teams, structures, strategies, and best practices in launching and running alternative investment funds. All right. What is up, everybody? Today, we've got Zach Brown in the studio with us today. Zach, welcome to the show.
Thanks, bro. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to have you here. So today we're going to be talking about it's New Rain Capital. Why don't you start off by giving me the elevator pitch on New Rain Capital?
So New Rain means, we have another company, it's called Modern Rain, but New Rain means like new leadership. You know, coming up, all I wanted was some sort of mentor, you know, in my career. And I never really landed one. You know, me and my business partner, you know, we always wanted to be the mentor that we never had. So that's why we called it New Rain. It means new leadership coming in. But we are a private equity company in the commercial insurance space. We own 9 companies and we focus on 2 things. One, are we able to centralize the back office services to make things more efficient and kind of clear the road for the operators to focus on the growth of the companies? And then can any new acquisition or investment share in the existing customer base that we have? So those are the 2 big checkboxes that we always look for. You'd be shocked at how many industries or companies share the exact same customer base.
Phenomenal. And so we were talking before we kicked off here. So you've deployed about $5 million into this strategy of your own capital, from what I understand. And now you're kind of saying, hey, look, this has been a great model. I now want to go launch, I think you said $30 to $50 million fund to go out and execute on this same strategy. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, same strategy, you know, larger numbers. We want to buy bigger and faster. And I think that there's a huge opportunity in the space that we're in. You know, private equity is prevalent in the commercial insurance space, but they focus solely on the brokerage side and not on the service side. So there's a whole industry of claims handling and, you know, the medical management stuff. You know, there's a whole lifeline of a claim that has given birth to dozens and dozens, if not over 100 different industries. You know, attorneys, nurse case management, third-party administrators, transportation, translation, durable medical equipment, court reporting, investigations. I can go on and on and on that these industries exist because of insurance, to where private equity has not touched any of that. And so I think that we have an opportunity to really take over this industry. And us being in California, it's the largest hub of commercial insurance out there. So yeah, I think we have a big opportunity to really do something special here, and not in a competitive way, because I have a mindset of abundance, and you know, I see everybody as a future partner or resource or employee or, you know, whatever the situation is. But I think that we can do it in a good way in a dusty industry.
Yeah. So commercial insurance, are we talking like D&O, E&O, like what type of policies are these firms typically selling?
Sure. Just think of anything that a company buys. So not your personal auto and homeowners, but workers' compensation is a really big one. Employee benefits is really big. And then you have on the management liability side, what you were referring to, D&O, which is directors and officers, E&O, errors and omissions or professional liability. And then key man insurance, life insurance is a big piece too. So, which you guys probably know being in the private equity space. But yeah, workers' compensation, employee benefits. And then there's 100 other ones between all of those. There's property, general liability, excess / umbrella, pollution, earthquake, wage and hour, employment practices liability. Again, I could go on for days on the products that are out there, but the big ones are the workers' comp, employee benefits, life, and D&O.
Gotcha. And so how big are these shops that you're looking to acquire? Are these like Employee count, revenue, what's your target kind of buy box here?
Have you ever read the book Power of Broke
I haven't.
by the guy that started FUBU? Isn't
Nope.
it on Shark Tank?
Yeah, but I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Anyway, the book Power of Broke kind of goes in with sweat equity or hustle mode, and so that's just always been very comfortable for me, and so we've always chased opportunities with companies with a foundation, with so because that can eat up a lot of resources and a lot of time and pull maybe the most important people in your organization away from their highest and best use to focus on, laying the foundation of a company. So we try to get into opportunities at least with some sort of foundation. But and that's typically under 10 employees, between 5 and 10 employees is the kind of the sweet spot, and under 3 million in revenue. And our really specialty up to this point has been getting that company from, 0 to $1 million all the way to $3 to $5 million. And then maybe there are better shops out there to take you from 5 to 100, but that's really been our sweet spot, is get in double, triple, quadruple their business with our shared customer base, and then exit your position.
Gotcha. So it's kind of a growth, a traditional roll up strategy, excuse me, where you're going to go out and you're going to acquire how many of these companies do you think?
Well, I don't know if I would call it a roll up, because we're not going to roll it up into one large company. I think they're all going to be pieced off
Gotcha.
individually. But I think that 20 to 30 acquisitions is would completely get our hands around the entire marketplace to be able to control a process from beginning to end without any sort of conflicts. There's about 20 to 30 natural pit stops from writing a policy to closing a claim and everything in between. There's about 20 or 30 pit stops where we can optimize wallet share, maximize revenue capture, have one client pay us 10, 15, 20 times in expenses they're already paying. They're just all now going to be funneled to one company rather than 10, 15 different vendors.
Is there an actual exit then on these assets? Or so investors, how do they get their principal back, basically?
There's an actual exit. So the good thing is that there's not private equity in our space as far as private equity firms, but there are large players in each of these verticals, which are the buyers, right? But they solely focus on that one vertical.
So why would
So
you help me understand, why would you not roll it up into one large, behemoth, because then you basically get the multiplier effect on the sale to a larger PE buyer. Like, why would you not do that?
There's kind of a what's the stigma with large companies that have tried that in our space before. And there's still a couple floating around, but every single, those are the people we steal business from, because hey, they can't focus on one thing. They have all this stuff going on that they can't focus on one thing. All of ours are independently operated. That's all they do. That's their expertise. That's their specialty. And so, yeah, there's kind of a stigma or a bad taste in people's mouth to, well, just use the big guy. Well, very, very, very large companies operate like the government, and nothing against the government. Just, I can't name one thing other than the military that they really run well. And that's because they get, what, $100 billion a year. I mean, it makes sense on paper to do that. And maybe that's why private equity has not ventured into this space. I don't know. But people want to know that the effort is going to be there. At the end of the day, you still have to produce a good product. And I think if we did a roll up, the product is the one that suffers.
Gotcha.
So
And that makes sense. Okay, so go out and what percent of these companies are you buying? Is it majority, minority? What's your position?
It varies. Most of them are around 50%, 51% or 49. So we want to stick to 51, not for economic reasons, but in the insurance world, say you want to write a work comp policy, just one master work comp policy. Well, you can only include companies that you own 51% of or more in that policy. Otherwise, you have to have a bunch of different policies. And so for back office admin reasons, 51 makes sense. We can have a different distribution agreement, as far as, hey, distributions go out as if it's 50-50, but on paper we have 51% for administrative purposes.
So, okay. So on, yeah, that's a great distinction. So with voting interest, you want to have 51% of the company, but on economic interest, you might do transactions where you have less than that, a minority economic interest in the business.
Correct.
Yeah. Gotcha. No, that's really interesting. So what's the, I mean, we've talked a little bit about some of the value add, but like, why would an insurance company want to work with you? It sounds like you're going to take off the administrative burden. Is the capital, do they get a take a nice check at kind of a growth equity play when they come in? Or, talk to me about the psychology of these portfolio assets.
I think our network is really the value add of what they see. I mean, the commercial insurance industry is really large, but really it's really small, right? As far as the community goes, it's the in the decision maker space. I mean, it's the same 5,000 people, right? It's the same 5,000 people at the conferences that we go to. It's the same 5,000 people that are hosting events, same 5,000 people that come to our events. And so, I mean, we have a reputation. I didn't join this industry yesterday. I've been doing this for a decade in the largest, most expensive hub of this space in the country. So, and along with my partners as well, and together, I think that we're probably one of the most well-known trio in our space. So there hasn't really been any cold pitches necessary. Like, hi, I'm Zach Brown. This is what we do. Everybody kind of knows what we do. We have that reputation. I think that's helped because it's been a good reputation that we work hard, we're young, we have more runway in front of us than we do behind us. And so I think people see that trajectory, and we're not strangers. We're not strangers that are coming in gobbling up stuff. We're not strangers coming in and changing a bunch of things. And then even when we do exit these companies, we're not going anywhere. We're still here in our community. We're still here in our space. And we actually care about it. Like it is, we get so frustrated about how dusty it is that, the passion really shines through, maybe as frustration sometimes, but like we really care about this industry, that it could, there's so much opportunity for improvement. And with a little hustle, a little work ethic, a little strategy and a little timing, and tack on some resources behind that, I think that's a dangerous combination. So, and I think that that's been the reason that we've gotten so many people to say, yeah, you know what? Yeah, we'd love to be in business with you any way we can. If it's a partnership, heck yeah. If it's just a transactional deal, heck yeah. Like, we want to be involved with you guys because you guys are really going to do big things. We see big things in your future. So,
So if they're operated as independent companies, though, how are they not basically just competitors? And you talk about the shared customer base, and like, wouldn't they just be basically poaching, customers from each other? Like, what's a, you know, what am I missing here?
glad you asked that question, because that is exactly how the private equity community sees insurance. Like, oh, we can only get into one sector. There are hundreds of sectors. So I'll give you an example. Let's just take workers' comp because it's the largest sector in California. So you have writing a policy, right? So for Fund Launch Partners, your Fund Launch, you guys come to us and say, hey, we have 10 employees, 15 employees, 100 employees, we need workers' compensation coverage. Okay, I write you a policy. That's one way that we make money. Say you pay $1 million in premium, we make 10% of that. That's the general rule of thumb, right? Is brokers make 10% of whatever you're paying. Then Sally at the front desk, she gets injured. So now you have nurse triage, you have mobile first aid. Sorry, I actually have a whole thing here. I was just working on our deck the other day. Loss control services, recruiting adjusters, claims software, and the brokerage. Those are the things that you have when she gets hurt. But then she goes to the doctor. So there's pharmacy, there's diagnostics, there's durable medical equipment, there's transportation if she can't get there, there's translation if she doesn't, if English is not her first language, there's nurse case management. If you feel like the doctor might be exaggerating this or that, you know, keeping them off work longer than necessary, giving them the wrong medication. And then Sally is off work, sitting on the couch, watching attorney commercials, and the Price is Right. So she calls an attorney because the guy on the commercial said, hey, I can get you a $300,000 settlement if you've been hurt at work. So she calls up an attorney, which is very common in California. It's very litigious. And so there you have vendor management opportunities, defense firm in Utah, where you're at, in Arizona. If you're not an attorney, you can still own a firm. Claims advocacy, auditing, legal bill review. And then that attorney will set up a deposition to interview this injured worker. And our attorney, carrier's attorney, will also interview them. You have court reporting, videographer, translation, transportation, conference room rentals, copy service. And then towards the end of the claim, if you're suspicious that, hey, she might be exaggerating or she's flat out lying, Sally, she's playing soccer on the weekends and she's not coming into work because she's saying she's hurt, then you can go the investigation route, surveillance, social media checks, background checks, medical canvassing. And then once you come to some sort of conclusion, you can come up with a structured settlement. And then you got to review all those medical bills. So, and there's 100 more that I didn't even mention. And so they're not competing. They're working together. And we don't own several in any one at one pit stop. We own one at each pit stop.
Gotcha. So is that the premise for the fund then, is to acquire, you know, different shops with different specialties or, yes, or niches?
Yes. So
gotcha. Okay. That makes more sense.
And so say we choose 10 of those pit stops. So we're going to have 10 verticals that are going to work together in this process to speed things up, because the longer a claim is open, the more expensive it gets. Like, that's our saying, we have it written on our wall. The longer a claim's open, the more expensive it gets. And so our goal is to speed things up. And if you have the same team on multiple claims, then yeah, like, we already know how to work together. There's no learning curve, and it just speeds things up.
But
if we have 10 of those, then we have 10 different roll-ups. Yeah. So we do plan on doing that, but we'll only have one court reporting company. But we may go acquire other court reporting companies and roll it up into that, you know, that top court reporting company, that foundational court reporting.
That makes sense. But there's somewhat of a limited strategy in some ways, just because, like, I mean, if I wanted you to go deploy $200 million or $500 million over the next couple of years, it seems like the strategy is somewhat capped because you're going a mile wide, an inch deep, right? And once you've gone a mile wide, like, where else are you going to go? You know, like, do you,
deeper.
What, say that again?
Deeper.
So then, is that what you're kind of saying, is that you would, in each of these insurance product lines, you would then go acquire deeper, additional companies, yep, in that vertical?
Correct. Yeah. And then just roll it up into one. There's no reason to have multiple companies in the same sector, the same vertical.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because then, to your point, they would be competing against each other.
Right. Okay.
But cool. First, we have to have a presence in each, you know, each silo.
No, that makes sense. Well, cool. So this,
and there's
is
no competition.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. It's like, there's no competition as far as big money goes, private equity goes, there's no competition. And so that's what I'm most excited about, Especially, and even if somebody does come in, they're not going to come in with the insurance expertise that we have or the reputation that we have. So we definitely have an edge.
But and all these companies, they're not actually holding the policies on their books. They're just brokering the policy, right?
So brokers are at the very beginning of the process. They'll write the policy. All these other companies have nothing to do with the policy. And that's the area that's untapped.
Right.
The brokerage side is heavy in PE, though. I mean, Aon, the largest broker on the planet, they just bought NFP for $13 billion 3 days ago,
Oh,
4 days
wow.
ago.
Great.
Yeah, so it's really prevalent in that area.
Look, the name of this podcast is called Funds That Won. So we interview traditionally fund managers that are already running funds, but I like to bring on people that are just like really at their infancy and getting this thing off the ground. Obviously, you know, you're an experienced investor, you've done deals before, full cycle transactions with which a lot of spin out firms actually don't ever have. But you put your own money on the line, which I think is awesome. And now you're gonna go raise, you know, investor dollars to scale this strategy. I mean, talk to me about kind of your frame right now. Like, how are you thinking about the fund model, the fund structure, and, you know, scaling your investment strategy and your investment practice?
So I think that we have a killer strategy and set up how we already work. So not much of that is going to change other than the numbers will be larger. The opportunities will be a little different and even maybe even move faster because the companies that we're able to get into are already well established versus maybe needing a little bit more of our help. And my concern is not taking people's money. And my concern is not about giving them their money back with, more money attached to it. I feel like that's the least of my worries because we've done it several times with our own money. What I am learning is that there are 100 things between taking somebody's money and giving it back. There are 100 checkboxes between those two checkpoints. And so not only it is our responsibility to give people's money back with interest, but our responsibility is also to be a good steward of that person's money, to make sure that we are compliant, and all of those compliance rules are in force for a reason. And so we want to make sure that we are 100% compliant to the letter, to make sure that one, we don't do anything wrong, and then two, to make sure there's no perception of us doing anything wrong. And so really our focus now is to pay attention and listen and learn from guys like you and your team to figure out all of those check boxes that we need to check, right? And I'm sure there's a lot of wonky stuff that people do. Look, I'm from Indiana. I'm a simple guy. I still eat SpaghettiOs and hot dogs, right? So I like to keep things simple, mostly because I have to, but if anything, that would be my superpower to take complex things and keep it simple. And that's really what we want to do with our fund is to keep it simple, simple, transparent, not complicated, because the more complicated things get, people just lose interest. I want to keep it as close to, hey, you give me money and I give you more back as possible. If I can keep it as close to that as possible, that's what we want to do. We just want to use the proper mechanisms and vehicles to make sure that we are protected, to make sure our investors are protected, throughout the process. So, but if you're looking for details, there's a 2% management fee, the waterfall structure, probably European is what we're going to go with because that's in the investor's best interests, I think. And that's our responsibility as fund managers to do what's in the best interest of our investors. We're looking to raise 50 million. We'd like to keep it under 350 investors. And
Who do you
so,
plan to go raise money from?
we actually have a pretty solid network in our space. There's been a lot of consolidation, so a lot of people made a lot of money in selling their firms, or well, and we're in Orange County, California. I mean, It's the richest county in the country. So there's a high concentration of wealth here in Orange County that we've spent the last couple of decades, building our network with those pieces. So we have a pretty solid network. It's not like, I don't really look at it as, well, I'm going to go to a bunch of doctors and raise money, which is a good strategy, but that's really not the way we do it. I would rather focus on people that have even been in our industry and get it. You know, I think that makes the pitch that much easier. Yeah. If they have experience in it, they're like, yeah, oh yeah, like you guys will kill it. They'll understand. The harder pitches will be to strangers or maybe family offices. We won't shy away from that because I think our concept kind of speaks for itself with the centralized back office and shared customer base. But and our case studies, we have, the proof is in the pudding. So I think we have enough substance there to get money, but I think we'll start with our pretty vast network of people here in Orange County.
Yeah. And do you have a team behind you to execute on this? Talk to me about what that looks like.
We do. We have a team of throughout all of our companies. We have 55, it kind of fluctuates, 50 to 55 employees on staff. And then we have another 350 independent contractors. And in-house at New Rain Capital, we have 7. And it just focuses on those like shared services, marketing, accounting, HR, payroll, onboarding, offboarding, legal, stuff like that, compliance, licensing. So that's what our staff currently looks like. So I feel like we have a pretty solid foundation. I mean, we're not giant by any means, but through scraping and clawing, I think that we've done a pretty decent job. I mean, especially, because like I said, I came from Indiana and I sold everything I had. So I Googled what's the most expensive thing to sell, and it was insurance. And then I Googled where's insurance the most expensive, and it was California. So I sold everything I had and rented a car and drove across the country. And I didn't have a job lined up or anything. Like I was sleeping on the beach here on Laguna Beach for weeks and weeks.
No way.
Yeah, while I was interviewing at places, and it took me 6 months to get a job, and I ended up like selling DirecTV in a Walmart. You know, the guy in the back of the Walmart slinging DirecTV. What TV provider do you have? And then I finally got a job as a producer, and they gave me a phone, a phone book, and an empty closet. And they're like, make 300 calls a day, and I did. But it's like burn your boats type of moment, right? That I don't have a choice but to succeed. Either I fight and win or fight and die. So there's no retreat. So I'd make 300 calls a day. I even had a sheet of paper that I printed out 1 through 300. I'd mark it off, and I did really well. And then ended up partnering up with my partner Josh in the claims arena. I'm like, man, everybody's complaining about these claims. You're the claims guy, right? And started teaming up with him, and then kind of the rest is history. But it's a really rewarding industry, and I fought my way in to where most people kind of stumble into the insurance space. They're not passionate about it. They don't necessarily love it. They needed a job and they took it and ended up sticking around, or their family owned an agency or something like that. So I actually fought my way to be here, and I appreciate everything about it. And I love it. It just, I don't know. You appreciate everything more, when you earn every percentage of it. And I feel like that's how I feel about New Rain Capital too. Like, I never thought that I'd be able to be talking in the millions. I remember telling my grandpa one time when I was little, like, man, if I just had $1 million, I'd never have to work another day in my life. and my kids wouldn't have to work another day in their life. That's right. And you're growing up and you look to the right and there's a cornfield right there. Like that was my childhood, in our backyard. It's nothing but a cornfield. And so, that was kind of my mindset when I was coming up. And so I'm just very grateful of everything that we do have and the people that we have around us. And I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for Bridger and all of you guys. You guys have been just fantastic, man. I mean, I'm blown away at it's exceeded any expectation I ever had of myself or you guys. So I'm super happy with where we're at right now, for sure.
Well,
and I
thank
think
you.
that's the kind of partner that you want.
Yeah. Well, that's phenomenal. Well, that's incredible. How long have you been running this business for?
Since 2021.
Yeah. Great. And it sounds like it's up and to the right. And this fund is a way to, you know, really compound the growth and, you know, get to where you want to be quicker, right?
Yeah. Well, I think momentum is a huge ingredient that people overlook, is that, you know, people want to overanalyze, or, you know, and then paralysis by analysis kicks in, or you lose interest. I mean, how many times have you guys had a great idea and like, oh yeah, that's great, let's meet on that next Wednesday. And then by next Wednesday, like, nobody did anything and kind of lost interest. Life happened, stuff like that. So I think momentum is a big ingredient that people overlook. And so this fund would absolutely keep the momentum up that we currently have.
Phenomenal. Well, hey, Zach, thank you for sharing your story today and talking about your plans with New Rain Capital. Really excited for you guys. You know, before we wrap up here, just a couple of personal questions. What life advice do you have that to somebody who's thinking about getting into this line of work?
Private equity work or insurance?
Yeah, private equity. I know you're new at it, but to somebody that just getting going.
So I would say add value to people, and in a good way and in a genuine way, build up favor. It's been countless times that we have done things for free. We've helped people out. We've got people jobs. We've written letters of recommendation. We've made phone calls to talk people up. We make social media posts to spotlight people. You know, I'll review somebody else's policies. They have another broker and they're like, hey, I can't switch brokers. I'm like, hey, no problem. What do you need help with? Right. And they'll have me look over their stuff with no expectation of getting that account. And if you keep that mindset long enough, it will make a full circle tenfold. You know, those people that you helped for free 7 years ago are now the decision maker at a huge prospect of yours. And, you know, it just comes back tenfold. So, you know, be genuine in wanting to add value without a reciprocal expectation. Just help people, not in a charitable way. That's not what I'm saying. That should be your own choice. But like, root for people to succeed and help them succeed. I mean, on my LinkedIn, I have like, I'm rooting for you. And that rings true for everybody that I come in contact with. I'm rooting for you. I hope you do well. And I'm always here if you ever need anything. I can help you any way that I can. So I think that is, we need more of that overall. Root for people. Like, don't look at them as an adversary. I think there's too much of that. Like, have a mindset of abundance. There is more than enough business to go around for everybody, I promise. You know, just so I would like to see more of that, of like, hey, I'm rooting for you to do well. Genuinely, I want to see you do well.
Love that. Any habits you feel like have attributed to your success or growth in life?
Well, I have bad habits. I'm looking at a couple of them right now. Yeah. Tobacco and Monster. You know, I think that, I don't know, you know, that's a really, really good question. I think, maybe a mindset, not a habit, but a mindset is like, the worst thing in the world to me would be letting somebody down. Right. And like, that's, so, I don't know. I grew up in sports, you know, baseball, basketball, football. I played baseball in college. And maybe it comes from that, like, not wanting to let your coach down, or my dad. I don't know. And habits. I don't know.
No, I think that's a good one. So just being in a mindset of just kind of a winning mindset, right? Of a completion mindset.
Oh, I have a habit, maybe. So I'm a early bird and a night owl. So it's not a good combination. You know, I get up early and I stay up super late. But one thing I learned in my 20s when I first moved out here, maybe a year or two after I moved out to California, I would go on runs. I would, go jog really, really, really late at night, like 11:30, midnight, 1 o'clock. I would go on a run. And there was something about like the peace and quiet at night that really cleared my mind, one, but two, it made me feel accomplished. When you, or if you've ever gone fishing, like you wake up before the sun comes up to get out to the pond or the lake. And, you're whenever you stop to get coffee or your drive to the pond, like there's something about being up before the rest of the world. Like you accomplish something that nobody else in the whole world, you're ahead of everybody else. You got a jump start. And I feel the same way really late at night is everybody else is sleeping right now. Everybody in the whole world. And I'm the only one awake. And it just feels like you get more accomplished. I don't know. Like there's an accomplishment type of feeling that settles in that the whole world is asleep. And I didn't miss out on that thought, on that idea, on that additional task that I completed or whatever. So I think maybe not both would be a bad one to suggest to anybody, but one or the other, be an early bird or a night owl and really like take advantage of that. That's not a History Channel time to catch up on your missed episodes. Like that's a time to get to know yourself better and really perfect who you are so you can help other people.
Phenomenal. Love it. Zach, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your story. Excited for you. I'm rooting for you as well. Genuinely. Thank you for your story.
Thanks, man. Well, I think that one of our goals and one of my goals is to, stay in contact with you guys, with you and your team. And so hopefully, you see me around a little bit more, maybe a few years from now, even, I'm lingering around helping people if I can. And maybe we can do this again.
Love it. Sounds great.
Maybe I'll start a podcast. Have you on.
Hey, I'm there. I'm there.
All information shared are solely the thoughts and opinions of the author or guests. Content is for educational purposes only. Do not take any information from the show as financial, investment, tax, or legal advice. Seek counsel from a licensed professional before taking action in any business pursuit. We're not selling or soliciting a security in any way, shape, or form. The host may maintain positions in securities discussed on this podcast. Guests on the show may be current or historical clients of Fund Launch Partners, or Black Card Capital Partners.